Coming up in this episode,
the poems resonate, and the stories and the prose poems resonate with each other.
A comma, punctuating the whole of my life, separating its parts.
You know, I'm a new dad. A new child is a comma in your life, for sure. Divides the before and the after.
This podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting highlights books with Georgia connections, hosted by two of your favorite public radio book nerds who also happen to be your hosts of All Things Considered on GPB. I'm Orlando Montoya.
And I'm Peter Biello. Thanks for joining us as we introduce you to authors, their writings, and the insights behind their stories, mixed with our own thoughts and ideas on just what gives these works the narrative edge. Orlando, today's book has everything.
Everything under the sun.
Everything under the sun. It's got poetry, nonfiction, fiction, all the things we regularly talk about on this podcast rolled into one collection.
Well, how's that going to work in just one book?
Well, it folds together nicely thematically, and we're going to talk all about how that plays out in this book, which is by Sean Hill, who bills himself primarily as a poet. His website is seanhillpoetry.com, and his first two books were collections of poetry. This is a podcast about books with Georgia connections, so I will say that he grew up in Milledgeville, but now teaches creative writing at the University of Montana. And we had a really great conversation about his work. I've been excited to tell you about it.
The Negroes Send Their Love: Poems, Perspectives, and Possible Futures. I'm very interested in that title.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a lot going on in that title. And he told me a little bit about what inspired it. So early in the book, he describes how he went to the former governor's mansion in Milledgeville. You're well-versed in Georgia. You know that was the Confederate capital of Georgia. And at the time of the Civil War, Joseph Emerson Brown was governor, and he and his wife, Elizabeth Grisham Brown, had enslaved people in the governor's mansion. And as part of an exhibit at the museum there, Elizabeth Grisham Brown's letters are available, and she signs off one letter to a friend with, "The Negroes send love to their friends." And he writes in this book that he thought about that line for a decade, and he went back to the archives to read that original letter again. And I asked him why that stuck with him.
In part because of the relationship it indicated to me, like there is some knowledge of these people and who they might consider friends, and that they do love their friends, and that also this idea, or the fact rather, that you know, they can't send their love directly, they can't write, they're not allowed to write. And the only reason I know about this is because she put it at the end of this letter she was writing home to her family. And it gets preserved in the archive.
So I bet this book is going to connect that past racism and today's situation.
Yeah, you could make that argument. You could come to that interpretation in this book. But there is a lot of room for interpretation about what exactly he's trying to say about racism then, racism now. He writes in prose about the governor's mansion and the letter he saw there, but he writes a lot of poetry here too. And from my perspective, the poems are primarily meant to make you feel, as opposed to make you think, although it does ask you to think to some extent, but feelings are the primary driver here.
That's what poetry should do.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's one poem in here that's a bit too long to read, but I think listeners would appreciate reading it if they get their hands on this book, about how he's getting onto an airplane, and there's an Atlanta-based flight crew, and he hears the flight attendant's accent, the Southern accent, overhead on the speakers, and he thinks, ah, I'm home. And that's the comforting feeling to start. And then later when he's sitting way in the very back of the plane, the flight attendant seems really attentive to the white man sitting next to him, offering to bump that white man up to the front of the plane. And it seems to him like she's trying to offer this guy a chance to get away from what he's calling his blackness.
I don't know if I misread, you know, what was happening there. But if I felt a certain way, like I felt like I was being ignored, and this other person was, there was a lot of attention placed upon them, and also sort of offering to move them up, which the person was just like, I'm fine, this is fine, you know, it was like the last row, one of those seats that doesn't recline, and you know, we're on kind of a long flight. And I was like, if it were me, I would have gone. Yeah, but I felt like I was invisible. Yeah. And at some point I was like, part of what this book I think is concerned with is context. And I was like, I think this, what started out as me thinking about a footnote for a haiku, which is kind of a strange thing to do, became a sort of flash nonfiction piece about that experience and how that experience might be a resonant experience for other things.
So poetry takes a lot of forms. I'm kind of a kind of a connoisseur, so okay. I'm interested in hearing one.
All right. Well, let's. I did have him read one to me. It was kind of a beautiful poem about being a parent. Like, he writes a lot about being a parent. He has a son, and he wrote this one poem called "Hello," which is really lovely. Let's hear it.
She, being the midwife and your mother's longtime friend, said, "I see a heart. Can you see it?" And on the gray display of the ultrasound, there you were as you were, our nugget. In that moment, becoming a shrimp or a comma, punctuating the whole of my life, separating its parts before and after. A shrimp in the sea of your mother. And I couldn't help but see the fast beating of your heart translated on that screen and think and say to her, to the room, to your mother, to myself, it looks like a twinkling star. I imagine I'm not the first to say that either. Unlike the first moments of my everyday, the new of seeing you was the first, deserving of the definite article, moment I saw a star at once so small and so big, so close and getting closer every day, I pray.
So that's "Hello." What do you think?
I think it's beautiful. I mean, I never heard a poem about an ultrasound before, so I think that pretty much sums up the joy in that moment, and also the novelness of it for this person.
Yeah, I mean, the part of that poem, not the whole, but part of it is in the inside jacket flap of this book to sort of demonstrate how powerful his poetry can be. So a worthy poem to put on this podcast, where all we can offer is really a sample. But, you know, I'm a new dad, that I gravitated towards that one especially. I mean, a new child is a comma in your life for sure, divides the before and the after. And his son is old enough now to sort of understand poetry and actually likes that one. So that's kind of cool.
So we've heard some of his, well, we've heard one of his poems. We've heard his perspective on race and whatnot. What is this possible futures in the title?
Yeah, that's a fascinating part of this, right? Because he's writing about a fictional other than Earth type place called Blackstan. Here's how he describes Blackstan.
It's a word I coined to sort of name what a space station that is inhabited by people who identify as Negro might be called, but also outside of being a space station place, but thinking about it as a community. And I don't know, I was trying to figure out what would you call that community? What would you call that space? This sort of homeland in outer space, and it sort of follows the use of the word "stan" in places like Afghanistan or Pakistan, like the land of people. So I was like, the Black Stan, and also "stand" as in station. So all these sort of like ways of thinking about making a word that would stand in for a bunch of things.
So you really did mean everything. This is like
science, sci-fi, right?
Science fiction going on.
Well, it's super fascinating, and it comes, the mention of Blackstan and the lengthier descriptions of Blackstan come at a part in the book where we've already kind of encountered a lot of the racist imagery that that he's contending with here, the racism that his, you know, he's heard stories about. So, like, for example, there's a poem in this book about him playing in a playground with his son and seeing a swastika carved in a slide or some kind of piece of the kid's jungle gym. And so, you know, that could really cast a pall over the novel, or rather the collection, and it does. But then you have something like The Black Stand, which is a bit of a hopeful thing.
It's like Wakanda.
Yeah. I would say it is akin to that. And to some extent, there's hope on the horizon, and that kind of lifts the cloud of despair a little bit. And he said in our conversation that it feels optimistic to him. I asked him why.
But yeah, it feels optimistic to me because I think I'm trying to at least write about people who are trying to act differently toward each other and the community that they have around them, including the asteroids and whatever else is out there. Just sort of have a different way of being. So that it feels hopeful to me. I intended it to be hopeful. I hope it's read that way, but I also know that the work will land how it lands.
So, I mean, I think that one thing that might give this book the narrative edge is just the mix of genres.
Mm-hmm.
So what else gives this book the narrative edge? I mean,
well I would say, you could do a mixed collection poorly, but I think this is a well done one because the poems resonate, and the stories and the prose poems resonate with each other. There's an erasure poem that I think is really cool. There's sort of a fictionalized documentary script here that's you know, almost like you had to write it with an Excel chart to some extent to get the lines in there. But I mean, it's done well. I mean, it gives you enough to chew on and allows you the space as a reader, I think, to sort of draw connections between the two or three or four, however many poems you feel like resonate across the book, which I don't think you necessarily have to read in a linear fashion. You could jump around if you like. I read it linearly, but you don't have to do that. Overall, a moving collection. I really liked it.
Well, you know what? Maybe he should have contacted a graphic novelist too, put some art in there. And music soundtrack too.
Well,
do the whole thing.
He may be listening to this, and he did tell me during the course of our conversation that he's not done exploring the idea of Black Stand, so who knows?
All right. The book is called The Negroes Send Their Love: Poems, Perspectives, and Possible Futures. Thanks for telling me about it.
Happy to.
You know, every day on Up First, NPR's Golden Globe-nominated morning news podcast, we bring you three essential stories. At the heart of each story are questions. What really happened? What really mattered? What happens next? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious and to follow the facts. Follow Up First wherever you get your podcasts and start your day knowing what matters and why.